Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all you need. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You got
good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a great Wednesday evening for episode number 398. And this is Stephen Zimmer broadcasting to you out of the fine area of central Kentucky. Big thank you to Pete Fry and the band Far Cry for that great intro music that we have each week for you. And tonight is going to be a really, really good show. I'll tell you, we got some good news to go over tonight for sure. As far as the convention, of course, this podcast is affiliated with the Imaginarium Convention. And so, yeah, we have some very, very good news to share with you. And then some other things. And then joining me in just a little bit is going to be the amazing Holly Phillippe. So she'll be coming aboard here in just a second. I think, let me see, this may be her that's on the phone right now. I think, or she may be calling in just a second. But, yes, the chat room is open and working, and, yes, and this show is working. Big apologies to everybody for who wasn't in our control at all. The Blog Talk Radio system went down not once but twice during our December shows. We were able to get you the holiday show with Tommy B. Smith, and then we were, unfortunately, last week we weren't able to come right back that next day and do a show, but tonight's guest is back for, yes, a proper show. So we'll get on that in just a minute. I had a little difficulty with my phone tonight. Gave me a little bit of a scare. So yes, I'm having to operate off a speakerphone tonight. So my voice sounds a little hollow. That's the reason. That's the reason why. So, yeah, don't worry. Everything's fine and everything's working. And I see that the folks are coming into the chat room, which is good. And looks like we have the amazing Sandy Lender, the genre blender. I also see award-winning filmmaker and author Amy Lee McCorkle is in there. So, yes, it's looking good, folks, looking good. And so, yes, we're going to get to some of the big news here in just a second. I'm just checking a couple more things as we're going through stuff here. But just making sure it all is working, because, yeah, that wasn't any fun, was it, folks, with the show being down? That wasn't the best of times. So hopefully we're going to kick off 2024 with a really, really good show tonight for you, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And we've got, let's see, yes, we've got tonight's guest, but I'm going to hold off on announcing tonight's guest because, yes, he needs that proper Star Chamber Show introduction. And, yes, we do also have Duan Hearn Moon is in the chat room. Of course, he has a brand-new book out. Definitely you want to check that out and pick it up. And so I will get over here real quick and give you some of the good news. We did announce a couple of new panelists, and we proudly welcomed Lynn Tincher and Joseph Eisenberg as special panelists. Both are fantastic authors. Lynn Tincher just opened a new bookstore, folks, in LaGrange, Kentucky. And she just posted today that she is looking for folks to do signings there. So writers, you definitely want to get a hold of Lynn and her new bookstore in LaGrange. And I'm going to see if I can just check out one thing just to make sure I get the name of her store correct on the show here, because I don't like to give inaccurate information. And it's called, yes, Ground Up Books. Ground Up Books in LaGrange, Kentucky. And she is going to be hosting up to three signings every Saturday. And, yes, she said to email her at fromthegroundupbooks@gmail.com. Again, that's all no spaces in between. fromthegroundupbooks@gmail.com. And she is looking for authors to do signings. So that's pretty awesome. And I definitely am going to be give her a call because I have a new book coming out this month, Days of Darkness, a very intense horror novel. And but you all probably, a lot of you probably already know, a lot of you regular listeners to the show who follow the show closely know that, yes, today we had a gigantic announcement. And I'm excited, really excited to share this one with you. And earlier today, we announced our guest of honor, and none other than, that's just, there's so much to go over with this. I have to cover everything. But our guest of honor is New York Times bestselling, the award-winning author, editor, executive producer, playwright, and comic writer, Jonathan Mayberry. And this is just fantastic. I mean, he's a five-time Bram Stoker Award winner. He's an Audible number one bestseller, four-time Scribe Award winner, an Inkpot Award winner, an anthology editor. Not only that, he's the editor of Weird Tales magazine. He's the creator, editor, co-author of V-Wars, which those of you that are into vampires and Netflix may recognize that series starring Ian Somerhalder. And he also has got a big name in the comic book world. He's written titles for comic book companies ranging from Marvel Comics, and he's done a lot of popular franchises like Black Panther, Captain America, all kinds of stuff there. He also has written for Dark Horse and IDW, and just amazing. I mean, his fiction is in many genres. I mean, he writes thrillers, horror novels, science fiction, epic fantasy, and mystery. And his books also have been written for adults, middle grade, and young adults. So, I mean, it's like, I just look at this, I'm like, I mean, you can't be more qualified for the creative world than Jonathan. It is crazy to look at this and his record. But I do encourage you to go on the site. We do have his extended bio available on his guest page, so you can get a really good idea of all the stuff he does. Fantastic guy, and we're really, really looking forward to spotlighting him very, very, very soon in the Star Chamber show. And so he'll be, you know, we're going to work out something to get him in here. And yes, at the convention, you'll have a chance to meet him in person. There'll be all kinds of opportunities there. We'll have a moderated Q&A. Panels. I know Holly's going to be talking to him about doing a seminar slash workshop as well. So I'll be confirming that as we get it. But, yeah, he'll be in a lot of programming and stuff, and you'll have ample opportunities to meet him and talk with him. And that's one of the cool things about Imaginarium is you actually get to meet the guests, not just, hey, let's just, you know, pay money for an autograph and see somebody for 5 seconds. No, at Imaginarium, you actually get to talk and meet, you know, the main guests and all the guests, all the spotlight guests and panelists. And that's one of the cool things about our convention is that, you can get to talk to folks and really pick their brain. And so many had good stories last year of conversations they had with Terry Brooks. And it was just awesome to hear the kind of feedback I was getting from folks who got to meet him and talk with him or be on panels with him. And I myself was fortunate enough to be on one panel with him, and it was just awesome. So, yeah, it's that kind of environment. And, yeah, with Jonathan Mayberry, when you read through his accomplishments and the awards and everything else, you're going to see that he has such a broad range of expertise. I mean, he's tailor-made for Imaginarium. Let's just say that. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And, I hope you all are very happy about this announcement. Definitely hope, get the energy out there. Spread the word. Yeah, we definitely got a single day and full weekend event tickets and all that good stuff. We do still have expo space. Do still have some award banquets tickets on other things. So, yeah, go and make sure you get set for the summer. I told you we were working on some big stuff and glad to finally be able to share our guest of honor announcement. And, of course, we also have, you know, this Imaginators publishing, game publishing icon, Steve Jackson, and also Hollywood and stage actor, writer, and filmmaker Bill Oberst Jr. And so, yeah, we got some just amazing guests just all the way down. And browse our page. Yeah, click on those graphic banners and investigate the various panelists and guests we have because, yeah, just a fantastic, fantastic group. So, tonight's show is brought to you by the amazing Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender, and then the fine folks from Per Bastet Publications. So I'm going to give you a little bit from Sandy. This is a brand new spot. And please do. It doesn't cost you a dime to subscribe to Sandy on YouTube. But she's got a great BookTube channel. It's been growing. It's on YouTube. And it's under Sandy Lender. And she has got great content, posts all the time, doing reviews and all kinds of things over there. It's a great channel. Check it out. And here's a little bit about it from Sandy herself.
Hey, Star Chamber listeners. Did you know that author Sandy Lender has a BookTube channel on YouTube? She's using the platform to talk about books and stories and indie authors and new characters you might not have heard of before. And she's doing it all with a positive spin. Check out Sandy Lender at Sandy Says Read on YouTube for all the creative, bookish goodness.
That's awesome. Yes, it costs you nothing. Did I mention that? Yeah, just click over to YouTube, find Sandy's channel, click that little subscribe button, and then also click the get all notifications button so you make sure you get all of her new videos. And yeah, it's a great channel, positive energy, and like she says, Sandy says read. That's right, folks. And so now we also want to recognize Per Bostet Publications. They're awesome. The triumvirate of T. Lee Harris, Marian Allen, and Sarah Marion. Per Bostet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With 40 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostet offers a little bit of everything. While the investigations of Private Eye, David Blaze, and M.B. Dabney's An Untidy Affair, a historical mystery set during the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia, or join the psychic private investigator Alan Rodriguez in New Mexico in A Handful of Dirt by Janie Franz as he tries to clear an elderly man wrongfully accused of murder. You can find these titles and more at PerBostetPublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at events such as In Conjunction in Indianapolis and Louisville's Imaginarium Convention in July and Prime Crime in Indianapolis in October. Per Bostet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. Yeah, thank you so much to them. They are awesome, and they are also going to be at Imaginarium, where you get to browse all their great, great titles. And so we're going to be getting joined by Holly here in a minute, I believe. So hopefully she's not having any trouble logging in here. It's been an adventure on the platform, but you all are hearing me because I can see you in the chat room, so that's good. That's hopeful. So we got that going for us. So, but we are going to see. I'm trying to find. Let's see. We got Sam. Okay, looking back in the chat room here, and yes, we got folks that are new subscribers to Sandy's channel. That's awesome. So yeah, go over there and check that out. And what I'm going to do is going to go ahead and bring aboard tonight's. You know, and you hear me clicking. Yeah, again, sorry, I have to be on a speakerphone tonight, so there'll be a couple little rough edges there, but nothing to worry about. But yes, I want to make sure I give tonight's guest the grand introduction, since we weren't able to do it last week. So here we go. Tonight's guest is an award-winning author, indie publisher, an editor, a fantastic podcaster, and, as if that's not enough, a playwright. He has written numerous novels and anthologies, and his works appear in magazines such as Back Issue Magazine, Hogan's Alley, Knights of the Dinner Table, Retro Fan Magazine, and many other publications. Currently has a new action-adventure, new pulp novel called The Terrors, and he is the mastermind behind Rising Tide Publications, a publishing house, and also an awesome YouTube channel that you also should subscribe to. He is a favorite here on the show. And I am proud to welcome onto the show tonight the one, the only, the amazing, the man wearing the fez, Brian K. Morris. Brian, your mic should be on.
Well, we'll find out in a second now.
Yes, it's working.
Yeah. It's huzzah, huzzah. Stephen, it is great to be here with you. It is such a joy to talk to you again.
It is, and it's great that the platform tonight is working. The Blog Talk Radio is actually working. It's wonderful. We got all systems go in 2024. What a way to kick off the new year with you too. Just that's the way it worked out, and couldn't be better. So glad to
that's
have
right.
you. And And now we're going to bring aboard Holly, and hopefully her connection is working. Holly, are you there?
I hope so. Hello, hello.
Yep. I hear you.
Yay.
Yep.
Hi,
we got Holly
Brian.
Now.
Hey, Holly, how you doing?
Oh, I'm here. It's been a wild day, but I'm here. Woo. I have to use grandson's phone, so I was hoping Stephen recognized the number because he's probably wondering who is calling in.
No, I got the number right.
Well, he probably recognized my number because, you know, he's probably not used to seeing my phone number without the words "for a good time call" above it. So
there you go. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
No.
There you go.
Well, we're just happy that phone lines are working, that the platform is working, and that the chat room is working. So right now we're grateful. Things are working. So that's the key word.
That's right.
But yes, tonight we've got a lot because, you know, we always love having you visit on the show, and you've always got so many cool things to talk with us about. I mean, you're one of the very busy, multi-talented, multi-faceted types out there. And, of course, you get Rising Tide Publications, mentioned that. You've been doing some great live streams on your YouTube channel, and definitely encourage folks to check that out. But you also, are always, have new book projects coming out. We've got lots of things that are near and dear to you, like your crusade against imposter syndrome. You also have a good view of the state of publishing, all kinds of stuff. And so tonight, yeah, we're going to get into all of it. But first and foremost, I mean, you have a new book out, The Terrors, and I would love to hear about it and dig into this new book with you.
Thank you. I'm really proud of The Terrors. It's based on a old comic book character called the Black Terror, and this may be a frightening glimpse into how my mind works or how many other writers' minds work. Because I was told one time that if an idle mind is the devil's playground, then mine would be Disneyland. And as further evidence of that, one day I'm just like staring into infinity. I'm thinking, what if like all the comic book and pulp characters that had the word black as, their first name, like the Black Bat, the Black Terror, the Black Panther, in this case, it worked for the Black Panther, but what if they actually were African Americans? How would that change the dynamic of their adventures? Especially in times in the past.
Right. Things were much different.
So I just kind of filed it in the back of my mind. And one day I was reading a book about the history of comic book covers, because I'm a huge comic book guy, obviously. And I was reading this book, and it said that the War Department during World War II had gone to the major publishers and said, could you start drawing the Axis soldiers and leaders as caricatures of how they were, and, in order to dehumanize the enemy. And it's an old tactic, and I got my mind to whirling and everything, and with my love of conspiracy theories, I concocted this scenario where the superpowered people of color and, other ethnic groups were told by the government to stop your activities. Stop it, because we want to use your adventures in comic books, but they didn't tell them we're going to make them white guys. And we want to use that as a recruitment and a morale tool, because comics, really one of the peak periods of sales were during the war years because of the PXs. And, that's when you were selling millions of copies of most comics, because they were mostly going overseas to entertain the troops. And then one neuron hit another, and I started writing all this stuff down. And then I have a Patreon page, www.patreon.com/Brian K. Morris, # always promote. I went and started what I called a first draft flash novel. And this is more or less a writing exercise on my part, where I had an idea of the end goal, where how the story would end. And I changed that in like four different times that I wrote. And then I told myself each chapter will be no less than 1,500 words, but no more than 2,000, and I will not plot the adventure out any further than the next chapter, which I normally don't do. I usually outline things to within an inch of its life. But this was a really good writing exercise, and it taught me to really tighten up my first drafts a lot, because that saves in the editing afterwards. And also, my Patreon supporters were my ARC readers. They were giving me criticisms and, you know, telling me what I should improve, what they liked, what they didn't as we went along. So that was really, really helpful to get that almost real-time feedback from them. And plus, I've got an absolutely gorgeous cover by Jeffrey Hayes and Plasma Fire Graphics for this thing. And that didn't exactly end. Yeah, seriously, it's gorgeous. And I've had so many people say, hey, I like that book. It's got Jeffrey's cover. I haven't had too many people go, hey, Brian, that's your book, right? I'm looking forward to it. No, I'm writing Jeffrey's coattails all the way. I'm telling you right now. It's like, but anyway, we got the book edited, and it's been, you know, revised from, of course, you know, from the time we premiered on Patreon, and I'm super proud of it. I've gotten some good preliminary feedback from some people who have started reading it already. So I'm just really tickled with it, and I'm looking forward to doing more adventures in this universe.
So how many characters are in total, like, you know, like the main characters and like B characters in this story?
Well, of course, you know, we've got a full cast, because I'm outlining criminal hierarchy, the mob hierarchy of what we call Raceway City, which is kind of like my setting for a lot of the pulp-tinged fiction that I do. And I know exactly where it is. It's halfway between where I live in Indiana and Indianapolis. And somehow it's going to have, like, oceanfront property. I don't know how that's going to work. But you know, a huge airport, you know, all the accoutrements of a Gotham City or a metropolis. But from the original comic, I've taken, like, of course, the Terror plus his kid assistant, Kid Terror, and the potential girlfriend and her jerk boyfriend right now. And then I borrowed another character from another comic book line, and also a pulp character while I was at it, stealing things. Don't steal anything small. That's what W.C. Fields used to say. And then I just populated it with the neighborhood, the people in the Terror's, where he lives. Because in his civilian identity, he's a pharmacist named Dr. Bob Benton. And which took me down various, you know, rabbit holes, you know, like what were the standards for being a pharmacist at that time?
Right.
And also, what kind of education did African Americans and other ethnic groups have available to them? That's one of the things I really... Yeah, it's like,
right.
That's one of the things I really like about period pieces, is going back and researching them and finding out how things worked back then, you know, even at a time before I was born. So a lot of research went into this book as I was writing it, and that's one of the reasons I'm just, you know, super stoked about this book. And it's done quite well so far, and I want to thank everyone who has bought a copy, and to everyone who hasn't, what are you waiting for? Indulge yourself. You've been good to yourself.
Yes, I'm going to have to definitely check this out. Sandy Linder in the chat said she's actually reading it on her Kindle right now.
Oh, excellent. Nice. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Also, that's fantastic. I will say, to anyone who wants to sample it, we are using We have not gone through Amazon for this. We're trying something different on this one, and we are currently available on a couple of the services that your local libraries offer, where you might you should be able to Overdrive. That's the one I'm on currently,
Overdrive.
And we're waiting. We're waiting on word from Hoopla.
Okay. Okay.
And for those of you who are worried that Brian's become a charitable organization, no, I still get paid even though you get to read it for free. So,
right.
You know,
right. Because they're just platforms. Yes. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And for anyone who wants to know, I don't keep it a secret. I'm using Draft to Digital.
Draft to Digital.
Number two,
yep.
Digital.
That's what we use. And you can choose.
Oh, cool.
I mean, with Draft to Digital, you know, there's so many different platforms that you could choose from. And, yeah, Hoopla and Overdrive definitely two that I check off, and that Biblioca or whatever, you know, I always check those off because, that gets it out there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it covers them.
Yeah, highly
encourage that. Yeah. Plus it also entails the bigger, platforms everybody's familiar with, you know, the Barnes and Noble.
Yeah.
And
iTunes, Amazon. Everything.
All that. It's a nice one-stop shop, and very excited.
Wonderful.
It seems like they're getting into the print-on-demand side of things, too, for those that are self-publishing or small press. So that's going to be interesting to see how good their fulfillment is on that.
Well, I can tell you right now the print quality on their stuff, and I want to tell everyone, I don't work for Draft to Digital. I'm not employed by them. I'm not sponsored by them. But Draft to Digital, if you're listening, I am available. Just letting you know. But anyway, I can be bought.
There you go. You can't be bribed. You can be bought.
Exactly.
Right.
Well,
that's the way you can't put a price on the human soul. I was going to say, you know what? When you're your brand, you know, when you are the brand, that's pretty much it. Everything's for sale. You know, that's
that's right.
Yep.
That's right. Well, you know, that's why I wear the fez around here.
That's it. That's it. Heavy is the head that wears the fez. Right.
Exactly.
So this is a book that not only is a new novel for you, but it's also the launch of potentially a whole new franchise for you, if I'm hearing you right.
You are. Like, you are. And because I just had so much fun writing this. I really did. So,
I'm looking at the cover. Looks gorgeous,
too.
Yeah,
it
covers.
Sounds fascinating.
Really, yeah, well done.
And that is a genius.
Well, I have a question that's really going to let the listeners peek into your head a little bit. Pick your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you see playing your pharmacist, your lead character there? Who would you see playing them in a TV series or television movie?
You know, it's funny, Holly, that you mentioned that because Jeffrey was one of my supporters on this project, and after a while, I got halfway through the work, and he starts writing me and saying, "Brian, who would you cast if you were doing a Black Terror movie? Who's playing the kid?" In my head, of course, I'm pulling from all the period, mostly the period, you know, the 1930s and 40s.
Right.
But I had a few people in mind now, a young Denzel Washington.
Oh, okay.
You know, he would be Bob Benton. I can't remember who I picked for the kid. It was another contemporary actor, but like Gene Starr, who plays the potential romantic interest, I had a blonde Myrna Loy.
Ooh.
Because Gene Starr has a spine of steel. She is, I like writing strong female characters. And in this, in the original comic show, she doesn't put up with a lot of guff from anyone. And I wanted to convey that in the book, too.
Nice. I always think, because most authors, you know, whether they talk about it or not, they obviously, you've got a picture in your head of your character, and most of the time, 99% of the time, I would say, someone, you know, an author is going, a creator is going to think, ooh, you know, this person would be really good to play this character in a movie or TV show. And that just gives you an idea. And when you answer that question, then for, you know, readers, it gives them an idea then of what the character would, appearance would be, what their tone would be, you know, their their actual character, you know. Because, yeah, I mean, actors all play a role, but they still all play it. A little bit of their soul is bared, you know. They're still themselves, but even though they're playing a character, they are still have that, you know, that bit of themselves that shows through, shines through. And I think that really gives a peek into your character.
Exactly. And also, when I write, I pick this up from a comic book writer named Robert Kaniger, who wrote like a lot of war stories, superheroes, everything. And he said that he, when he would write, he would see a movie on a screen. And this makes it easier for me to cast the part of, you know, Bob Benton and, you know, Tim Rowling and everybody. If I have someone in mind playing that role, I did that with another period piece. I did the original Skyman Battles Master of Steam. I had like Gary Cooper with Skyman. Claudette Colbert was the lead female in it. You know, I just had all the roles cast from mostly that period. But, you know, if they had made a movie from, you know, like around, you know, 1940 or so, who would have been available to do that film? And that just, it made it easier for me to keep track of it and to keep track of appearances and such. But I think it also it made it easy to cast the movie that I'm seeing on the screen in my head. So.
Right.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds yeah, this sounds amazing. And the period is just perfect for, you know, a pulp style novel. I mean, it's this should be right in your wheelhouse for sure.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. I love this period, you know, of Doc Savage and The Shadow and all that, because that's a lot of the literature I grew up reading.
Right.
I can still remember going into a cigar store, a pipe tobacco store, rather, in Danville, Illinois. My mother took me in there, and I don't remember what she was in there for. It wasn't the tobacco or anything, because I had nagged her out of that. But I saw the Doc Savage Bantam reprint number 8, the Curse of the Werewolf. And I'm looking at this bright, bright cover with somebody that looks like Lon Chaney from the werewolf movies strangling this guy in bronze. And I'm telling my mom, I need to own this book. I've got to have this.
I got to have
this. And that began yeah, you know, don't say you can't judge a book by its cover, people. It's not true. But
that is exactly right.
Yeah, we got Jeffrey Hayes.
Yep.
We all
but
do
no, but no, I,
by the cover. You know, we do. We and I tell people that. I know that's what I'll say, don't judge the book by its cover, but I'm like, oh, absolutely, people do. I'm always like, you got to be careful about your covers because 100% people do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the worst selling book that Rising Tide has ever done was a book I designed the cover for. Needless to say, my wife took one look at it and said, I'm fixing that right now.
I love your wife.
Yeah, your wife is awesome.
She's a lot of fun. And plus, now here's the thing, I'm very proud of her. During the lockdown of 2020, she taught herself how to do Photoshop.
Nice.
Yeah, so she's like doing not only my books, but she's working for other publishers now. So,
that's
she's
cool.
More work than I do.
Yeah, there's a
well,
learning
there you
curve
go, people.
That. Yeah. Big kudos to her on there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
that's not the easiest program to master. So,
Yeah, I know. We all should have
Microsoft Paint is mine.
Microsoft Paint's cool too. But during 2020, you know, I'm looking back and I'm like, what the heck was I doing? You know, like nothing extra got done in the house. I didn't write 12 books. I didn't learn Photoshop. I'm like, what the heck was I doing?
I know what I was doing. That was writing.
You were writing.
Right,
yeah,
there
I was
room.
Cooking. Because I couldn't eat out. And so I was telling Steve, oh, well, I've got to have some, you know, pad thai. I had to have some pad thai. So we bought a Jim Beam thing, of all things, a cast iron wok. And I taught myself and learned how to make pad thai. And to this day, I can make some pretty good pad thai if I do say so myself.
Oh, wow.
I taught myself how to make egg rolls from scratch and dumplings and, you know, crab ragoon. And, all my favorite foods, you know, I taught myself how to do because I couldn't get it, obviously. So it's like, hey.
Yeah.
So that's what I was doing.
That's brilliant. I love that.
I was doing a lot of research. Steve was reaping the rewards.
Yes.
I understand that because this year for Christmas, my gift was an air fryer because we found one at a good price. And, my diet is flipping me off every day.
Oh, they're so fun.
They are, and I'm finding all kinds of new recipes for these things, and I'm probably gonna wind up on one of those reality TV shows where I weigh more than say Jupiter, so I have to be careful.
Go ahead, Ollie.
I have learned there is some healthy options you can make in that sucker, So I tried to do, you know, healthy options, but there's some awful good bad stuff you can make too.
I saw a TikTok video this morning on making caramel in the air fryer, and I'm like,
Wow.
We're talking about starting with like butter and sugar and heavy cream. You know, we're talking that level basic ingredient, but the thing is, it has been rather healthy because you know you can have like fried foods that have minimal oil in it.
What?
And that's they come out so crispy and everything. You know, egg rolls are heavenly in those things.
Oh, you ain't a kid. You are not. And what I'm gonna tell you, another thing is if you get like the Steve likes the beef. Hot dogs, you know, beef franks and stuff. If you get like the Hebrew Nationals and you stick them stuff in those
National,
air fryers.
The best. Hebrew National. The best.
Ooh, does it come with a pack of cigarettes for afterwards? I'm telling you.
Just about. I love those. Yeah, those are good. But see, I've been actually good the past few months, and there's a little less of me than there was in the summer. And it's noticeable. Ah. And now she's armed with an air fryer, or not air fryer, a KitchenAid mixer. So I'm in danger again.
Oh, it's on now. It's on like Donkey Kong. I've been waiting.
I hear you because I make a pretty mean Irish soda bread. So
made that. That stuff is delicious.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
My mother always used to make that, and I'm very familiar. Love it, absolutely love it.
We're making the chat hungry.
We are. I know. Question though. We get on food. I'll talk forever, but I just got one more question. Have you ever made the 7-Up biscuits?
No, I haven't. But I did see last night again on TikTok, which is my time waster of choice these days. I saw somebody took, cake mix, added mayonnaise to it, which you think, not good.
It adds moisture.
It adds moisture to it and a little bit of tang. And then they poured a 7-Up into it and baked it like they would a regular cake. And it looked absolutely delicious. So
sounds great, because mayonnaise is just fluffed up eggs and some oil. That's what it is, you know. A lot of people don't know
that's
that. And I love Duke's. I mean, I'm hooked on Duke's mayonnaise now. I can't eat any other mayonnaise. I love Duke's. I pay a little bit extra, but I don't care. It's good stuff, and I use it in a lot of stuff, you know. And so,
yeah.
If you've not tried Duke's, try Duke's. Oh, my word, it'll change your life.
I think I will look for it. I think I've heard of it. But, you know, a guy I used to work for in a bakery one time told me, he said, it just costs a little extra to fly first class.
And that's exactly right. And this stuff is a game changer. I do not like regular mayonnaise. And my son, he lived in Georgia, my son Noah, for a while. And he come back and he says, Mother, you have got to try Duke's Mayo. And he said, I know you don't like mayo, because I like Miracle Whip. He's like, I know you don't like mayo, but I'm telling you, this is the real deal. You've got to try. And so I bought some, and I haven't looked back. There is no Miracle Whip in this house. I have not looked back.
I will definitely keep an eye out for that then. Thank you.
Yeah, please do, because it is delicious. Delicious in recipes, delicious on a sandwich. It's good. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, just so you know, Brian, she does not work for Duke's Mayonnaise. That was an unsolicited promotion there.
Very true. 100%.
Good stuff.
Yeah, let's have some endorsement action here, people. Come on.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Come on. You know, throw us a penny or two.
So, Brian, to get back to Holly will talk for 3 hours if we keep on food. It's dangerous.
Oh, easy. I will.
And I'll help her, yeah.
But I do want to make sure that we get into, because one of your passionate areas is your crusade against imposter syndrome. And I would love to, let folks know about a little bit about you and where you stand on that, and get into it a little bit. That's important to us too.
Yeah, I think it's well. The last time I was at Imaginarium, everyone should go enter the Imaginarium.com. Hashtag always promote your friends. I was on part of a panel about mental health in creatives, and a lot of us suffer from, like, depression, I think, is probably the most common.
Right.
But one thing I didn't realize I had was imposter syndrome. And I tell people the first book I self-published was under the Kindle Worlds umbrella. And I remember the night I was going to send it off, you know, just launch the book and launch this career of mine, and my hand is trembling. Because all the doubts are going through my head. You know, who do I think I am? You know, what makes me think that somebody will read what I want to read? And then the thing is, it's the sort of behavior I wouldn't tolerate in anyone else. You know, like if you came to me, either of you, and said, you know, I don't know if I should be doing this, I would be the first to tell you, you know, you get in there and do it. You have got the moxie. You've got the stuff to make it happen. But I wouldn't take that advice for myself. And a dear friend of mine, Carl Witzman, who is a former counselor, had dealt with imposter syndrome. And it's an actual term, friends. It's actually, you can look it up on Wikipedia, in fact. It's an actual psychiatric term that basically you don't feel worthy of doing what you're doing or being who you are. And, you know, like one of the hardest things I had to learn when I started this self-publishing thing was to accept compliments.
Mm-hmm.
That was just
it's
astronomical.
Hard, yeah. Right.
It is.
And I
finally learned. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And he cured me with one line. And it was kind of fun because at the panel at Imaginarium, you could hear the collective light bulbs going off. So if anyone is listening, and again, kudos to Carl Witzman for this, the only people who get imposter syndrome are the people who've actually accomplished something.
Mm-hmm.
And
if
you think about it, even just the act of publishing, the act of writing, the act of planting your backside in front of a keyboard and typing out these imaginings in your or only in your head so far, that's something a lot of people don't have the courage to do. It has nothing to do with talent. It has nothing to do with plotting a career or anything. It has to do with self-doubt. And I think, you know, if you, you know, this, if somebody comes up and tells me, well, I just started work on my book, I'm writing like 10 words a day, I'm doing cartwheels for you. Because I know how hard that is. You know, even now, you know, I don't have 100% imposter syndrome, but it's still there in the back of my mind. But I just have to remind myself now that I have this tool about it. And I see where it limits a lot of us in the creative fields. And we've just got to start embracing the fact that we're awesome. We are freaking amazing because, you know, we go out, we do shows, we appear on wonderful podcasts like this, we do things to promote ourselves, we just get the work out there if nothing else. There's just 100 different ways that we are doing a lot of really terrific things in any creative field, and this is the one thing I think that limits a lot of us, and that's part of my crusade to make sure that I stamp out as many of these cases as I can.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely the people that, yeah, step into the arena, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do, and no. as you mentioned. And, yeah, because, I mean, once you put stuff out there, I mean, you know, everyone's looking at it, everybody, you know, and then, of course, you got, you know, reviews and critics and all kinds of stuff, and you're aware of that. And mm-hmm. and so, yeah, it does take a lot of courage to get off the fence and step into the arena. And so, yeah, at a base minimum, yeah, you got to have a lot of respect for folks that do that because it is not an easy process. And
no,
even if you put out a ton of books, and you know, you still get those little butterflies when you have something new coming out, you know, wondering, you know, what people are going to think or how it'll be received. It's not easy.
Exactly.
Well, you
got to
look
at
it from the perspective that not everybody can write a book. And you have wrote a book, so you are already doing better than more than half of the population of the earth.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an accomplishment. It really is. Even just getting started just takes so much energy and, you know, so much faith, really, that you're going to, you know, not waste your time if nothing else.
Right. Yeah, you got to have that drive. You got to have that push.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody that will push for you until you can do it on your own.
Encouragement from those around you goes a long way.
It really does. And a lot, and so many of us, and I've encountered this, especially when I was, you know, starting my journey. A lot of people, and some of them say they mean the best for you. You know, I'm just trying to save you from this, you know, cruel world of creativity and everything. Oh, you'll never make any money. Nobody will know your name. They'll have 1,000 different reasons why you shouldn't even think about doing this. You know, whether it's, you know, picking up a guitar and playing for somebody else or going onto a theater stage and becoming another human being. You know, just any sort of creative act, a whole lot of people there want you to stay in this little hole and maintain this identity that they have assigned to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely,
you got to learn to live for yourself. You know, I'm doing something now that I've wanted to do since I was in seventh grade, when I found out that somebody got paid to put the words in the word balloons in comics.
Nice. Yeah.
Right.
That's true. And unfortunately, yeah, I encounter a lot of the types that you're talking about. And I was even on one social media thread, I was kind of politely countering one such individual a couple of days ago, you know, politely, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of just very focused on discouraging others, and it's a pet peeve of mine when I run into that. But because you're right. I mean, you gotta got to go with your passion and get it out there. And unless you're out there, I mean, you don't know what can possibly happen. I mean, yeah, we know, not everyone's going to be a New York Times bestseller, but unless the only way to guarantee failure is by doing nothing. That's the only way to guarantee failure. So, yeah, it's
exactly.
You got to take that shot. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, you never know. You know,
yeah.
That's just like, all the creatives, you know, whether you're in music or you're in TV or you're writing books, you don't know. You don't know until you put it out there because it's hard to predict people. So, you know, you might wake up tomorrow and sell nothing, and then you wake up from now and, oh, my gosh, you've sold 1 million copies. What happened? You know, you just don't know.
Exactly,
yeah. Example, Brian. It just hit me. Yep. Prime example. It's a book I'm about to read, Blood Meridian, by Cormac McCarthy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get into that as a new novel I'm reading. Unfortunately, he passed away not too long ago. Because after learning his story, I really would have liked to talk to him. But there is an example right there because success eluded him for a long, long time. Go read his biography, everybody that's listening. If you're not familiar with Cormac McCarthy's biography, you know, he's, you know, behind like The Road and some just amazing works of fiction. And a lot of groups regard him as one of the top five American novelists of all time. Not everybody's going to like everything, but yes, I mean, there is a consensus that he is one of the greatest novelists in American fiction. But if you look at his biography and his path of getting, you know, published and what book sales were like for him and so forth. I mean, he ran into a lot of adversity for many, many years. And then finally, you know, later, yeah, everything, you know, popped through finally. And so sometimes, yeah, I mean, just because, you know, you've been out there for a little while and things haven't sold, you know, tremendously for a while does not mean that at some point, you're going to find your audience, that you're going to find your readers, and it's going to catch fire at some point. So, not a thing to be discouraged about if you don't sell right out of the gate. There are a lot of writers and some legendary ones like Cormac McCarthy that took many years before they finally, you know, connected with their, you know, audience and found their full readership. Yeah, it's not over if you have a couple of slow sellers out of the gate.
And you just have to tell yourself something that I heard from the motivational speaker Les Brown, who was playing checkers with his daughter, young daughter, one night, and you know, he kept winning, of course, because he's like 30 years older than her. And he said, "Honey, it's time to go to bed." And she looks at him and says, "Daddy, it's not over until I win." And so that's a powerful statement. So they stayed up, and she finally won a game, and she goes, "Okay, Daddy, I'm sleepy. I'm going to go to bed now." But, you know, just that attitude, it's not over until I accomplish what I set out to do. I like that.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's awesome.
Right.
So, Brian, what is your view now? We've talked about imposter syndrome a little bit. What do you think the state of self-publishing is? Because that does, you know, sometimes tie into it a little bit. And I think that would be a good that's a good segue for this. But what do you think about? Because I get the sense that you feel it's things are a little better in the self-publishing world these days. And why is that?
Well, I'm a hybrid author. I've been published by other people, and I like that perspective it gives me, because I'm also researching like what the big publishers do and all. And I think, you know, when I got into this full-time in 2012, the prevailing wisdom at the time, you know, if you went to some of the writing groups on LinkedIn and looked at the gatekeepers there, you know, according to them, you only self-published if you didn't have the talent to be picked up by somebody else. You know, they didn't take into account, you know, somebody like me who was impatient and didn't want to go through all the waiting and the uncertainty when I looked at what electronic publishing could do in print on demand and realized the potential there.
Well, and you keep your right to the cover. You keep your right to your content. You maintain your vision.
Yeah, if you're a control freak, this is your path. I mean,
I didn't
realize how OCD I was until I started publishing. Now I'm almost a tyrant. But so-called wisdom, a lot of good books have come out that are self-published in the last 10 years alone. And I know some people like Kenzie Michaels, who's in our audience. You know, she started before the, print-on-demand thing. Another friend, buddy of mine, Charles F. Milhouse of Stormgate Press, he also started before we had print-on-demand. And I just admire that kind of courage to take that kind of step at the time. But people now are coming around to seeing that a lot of self-published books are just as imaginative, just as beautiful. I mean, I would put The Terrors up against any book in a Barnes & Noble. You know, that I think it is a professional caliber. And I will also, vouch for you guys. You guys put out some beautiful work. And so does, Kenzie Michaels and stuff. I know a whole lot of people that their work is as good, if not better, than what you see on the racks of any big-name bookstore. And they're better edited because we don't have people. We don't have, unpaid interns who will skim the thing. We go through the effort of actually making it as, good as we can make it. And, yes, we sometimes fall short of the glory, but... And I hear the stones whizzing to my glass house when I say that. But a lot of people are coming around to the idea that self-published books are in many ways just as good, if not better, than what's in the mainstream. And we've had some people emerge from self-publishing to become more mainstream. I remember when I started, Hugh Howey was the guy. The guy who did the Silos series of books. He was the guy who put his stuff on Amazon. I remember hearing him on a podcast one time. He said that he self-published his first Silo book, and he was refreshing the Amazon page every 2 hours to see how it was doing. And when it hit a certain number, he turned in his 2 weeks, and he's never looked back. And I just think that's such a great story. And the thing is, right now, with different platforms for publishing, not just Amazon, not to rag on them, but we have so many choices now, and we have more tools at our disposal than we did back then. We've got easier ways to network now. I see nothing but potential in the self-publishing field. And also, if you do have a yen to be published by somebody else, what you publish yourself is your business card. It proves you can do the work. And I've gotten so much work. In fact, The Terrors is my first self-published book in 4.5 years because I was doing work for other people because of what I'd done on my own. So, go out there and do this thing.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to find a lot more out-of-the-box stories. Large publishers can be much more calculated. They're going to go off, if somebody has name recognition, they're going to look at, biographies and things like that. They're going to look at, franchises or tie-ins with popular media. They're not going to really take chances on the new, fresh, different idea. You're going to find that overwhelmingly at self-published and small press, type of release. You're going to find the original thing, the different. Something different. You're going to take more chances. You're going to find a lot more chances taken in storytelling.
You are.
Agreed.
And I'll tell you, in traditional, publishing these days, they're more concerned with not your content or not your writing ability, but how many followers you have on social media. That's what they're worried about.
Exactly.
That factors
into
it.
It's all about the mighty dollar and how many copies you're going to sell them, not the content of your writing or the quality.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's very true.
Absolutely. Right. But you're going to find a lot more chances being taken and new types of storytelling, new, blends of genres. You're going to find a lot more of those things in the self-published small press world. And Yeah, and people do it extremely well. I mean, we've got people, I mean, like Brian D. Anderson came last year to Imaginarium, and he sold, I think, with like half a million units self-published, and then he got picked up by Tor for a trilogy. And so, I mean, you got stories like that. And then you got people that are quite happy just to, you know, they make very good livings. And, you know, I know some romance writers and mystery writers that are doing quite well. And I can't out them because, you know, they shared some, you know, stuff with me in private on their Kindle reports and things like that, you know. So, but, yeah, they're doing quite well, to say the least.
Yeah, they're doing very well. And so,
doing very well. And so, yeah, you have a lot of people, you know, that can you know, do just as well as or better than a major press author who is self-publishing. And there's many examples of that. So, yeah, I think the respect for it's risen a lot, definitely.
Well, and like I said in the chat, I think you got to weigh the pros and cons, but it comes down to your end game. What do you see? What do you want to do with this? Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it comes down to. Do you want to sacrifice a vision? Do you want to, you know, go ahead, Brian.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, I was talking to a friend of mine in the New Pope field earlier this year, in fact, about, you know, he gets a lot of licensed work, working with other intellectual properties that somebody else owns. And you know, I've done a little of that. And, you know, I was asking him, you know, how do you, like, get into that? Do you have to have an agent or something? It's just something that is kind of penciled in my bucket list, not exactly written in a permanent marker or anything. And he told me something I thought was very profound, that you have to think about, is this where you want your writing career to go? Do you want to be chasing, like, whatever other people's IPs are out there? Which my understanding is they don't pay the same way that, you know, a lot of, you know, like what we do does. That's a terribly poorly constructed sentence. But anyway, you know, just, you know, you have to think about where you want to be down the road. Do you want to be working on other people's stuff, or would you rather be working on your own materials and rolling the dice on that? And I know where I'm going with it. I mean, I do work with other people. I've worked with like Bobby Nash on Abraham Snow. In fact, I won an award for it.
Bobby Nash.
Say.
You did.
That's, I love that. Thank you. And also, you know, like Charles F. Milhouse. In fact, I just sent him a new Captain Hawkland story for a new anthology he's doing. And I've done other people's you know, work on their IPs. But in the end, I like working on my own. I like working on with people who are working on their own as well. And like you say, not, you know, there are fewer people willing to put their fingerprints on your work when you go independent like this. And, you know, there's a lot of support out there. You know, we talk about my group, you know, the Rising Tide, and how, you know, we are as different a bunch of people as you could ever hope to get. We don't all write New Pope. We don't all write romance. But when one of us wins, we all start cheering for them. You know, that's the kind of support group I think everybody needs to find. You know, find the people who are doing what you might like to do. Find the people who are positive and supportive of others, and you know, they're, and if they're not supporting each other, you know, find another group, because there's plenty to choose from. So
I tell you what, Brian, Bobby Nash, my God, I follow him pretty close. We keep in touch, and he's a traveling library at this point. He has so many books out now. That guy he is killing it.
I look at his con pictures, and I see, like, you know, all of his stacks reach up to his shoulders, and I'm like, okay, there's my path. There's my who I want to be 5 years from now. So
yeah, Yeah, so yeah, Bobby's listening. Yeah, we definitely want to give him a shout out, and also Charles Milhouse.
Oh, yeah.
He does great work as well. And two excellent people, and both mm-hmm. very positive. They're exactly what you're speaking of. Both of them.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they've both been very helpful to me. You know, they didn't have to be, but they are. You know, that's part of the rising tide thing, that, you know, I try to pass it on because I can't possibly pay them back, you know, for all the, you know, times I've come to them with questions and they've stopped what they're doing to answer me. You know, I am very, very fortunate to have these guys as my friends.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great, great individuals. And, yeah, definitely, yeah, hope to have both of them to give us updates on the show, because I know they have a lot to talk about all the time. You know, they're both busy. But it's the tribe thing. It's what that's what Holly likens it to. You know, you got to find kind of like mm-hmm. your tribe, your writing community.
Yeah.
Find the folks that, you know, really will, you know, help encourage you. And when they give mm-hmm. criticism, it's constructive criticism, not destructive criticism, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
that's
the key. Yeah. But it's one reason we love you, because you're one of the positive forces out there for sure. And
Thank you. So are you guys. That's why I love you too. So.
But speaking of prolific and projects and working, because I want to make sure before the show comes to an end, is that we want to find out what is in your creative kitchen right now. What's percolating, and what are you working on? What's coming out in 2024? And then last, what's your appearance schedule going to be like? So you can give some plugs to your parents.
Well, get out the power strip, because Brian's about to deliver the plugs. Anyway, let's see. Right now in January, I am not doing too much writing except for my twice weekly blog on Patreon, www.patreon.com/Brian K. Morris, hashtag always promote. I do a twice weekly blog there called Every Vlog Deserves a Name. And it's just whatever's on my mind at that time. But other than that, I am in editor mode right now, because I've got I'm looking to start the process to get an audiobook for The Terrors going. Plus, I've been sitting on the audio files for a Santa Stein audiobook, and it's about time I got off my backside and devoted my attention to it. Plus, I am editing a book, an anthology that I've had for a couple of years, and all the contributors good-naturedly poke fun at me because I get distracted so easily, just me chasing the dream. But it's about a character I created called Doc Saga, who is an ageless white shaman who is healing the world one soul at a time. And I've been sitting on about half a dozen stories about this guy, and I have just started editing the copy for them. And we're going to get that out this year. Plus, we're going to start another flash novel for Patreon supporters. I'm looking at doing a sequel to either The Terrors or Volcana, or my long-awaited actual romance book called Aquatic, because I've got the cover artist waiting on that too, because of my you've heard of the butterfly syndrome. It's not the same way as me. I chase the butterfly because I'm easily distracted.
Me too.
I've got so many projects, and it's just whatever appeals to me at that moment. But once I start it, I am promising myself I will finish it. So I'm hoping to get out a couple more books this year, at least one anthology, possibly two, and hopefully a couple of novels. Plus, I've got a novel that is in the editing phase from another company, but they told me to keep my trap shut about it, so I will, that they'll tell me when I can start promoting. As for my convention schedule, I've got to remind everybody I'm elderly now. I'm past retirement age, but I'm busier than ever, and I love it. And I've got my usual aggressive promotion personal appearance schedule. And like this coming weekend,
The 5th and 6th, I will be at ShadowCon in Memphis, Tennessee,
nice.
At Travelodge by Wyndham. And
yeah.
I'm going to be there with some really cool people, and we're going to have a couple days of some laid-back fun there, and you can find out more about it at shadowcon.com/info with a vendors list and the guest stars who are going to be there. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I told myself I'm going to do fewer shows this year because I need more time for writing, and I think I've already got enough shows booked that I matched last year, which is like worked out to like every other weekend. I've got something going. But if you want to check out what I'm doing, please, you can, you know, become one of my Patreon supporters for just $1 a month because I won't shut up about what I'm doing. Also, I've got the Rising Tide Publications page on Facebook. I have a monthly newsletter that you can sign up for at my – oh, excuse me. The newsletter, I cannot call it a newsletter because the newspeak for it is Insider Information Email. Okay. And
nice.
You can find my doesn't that sound impressive?
That does.
But anyway, it's more impressive than it sounds. You know, probably less impressive than it sounds, but just the same, it's my rambling once a month to my my male supporters, M-A-I-L. I get everyone. But anyway, my full convention appearance schedule is there, and if anyone wants to figure out what I'm doing, and where I'm going to be, you can go to risingtide.pub, and you can sign up for the email, and that will come to you every month, and we will not sell, barter, trade, giveaway, or spindlefold or mutilate your contact information because we're selfish and we want you to all of ourselves.
I'm with you on, we don't share our list with anybody either. I understand that very well. Yeah, we keep that, in-house. But, get that. But, folks, you got to connect with Brian. Just a positive individual with an amazing writer and just quality publisher and a great, great broadcaster, podcaster, and, yeah, just so much. I mean, so please, folks, yeah, connect with him and pick up the Terrors. Because I need to pick up the Terrors now. Because now that I know about it, now I'm going to have to dive into this one. Sounds fantastic.
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Yeah, and
well, I appreciate you guys having me on as always.
Yeah, no, this has been great. Yeah, because we always love to have you on. Because like I said, you're always up to stuff, and so you've always got new stuff to tell us about. And of course, I'd seen that the new book had come out just prior to this, just recently, and really wanted to get you on tonight to talk about that. And of course, your very healthy perspectives for creatives and self-publishing and all those areas. So, yeah, appreciate you coming on tonight, Brian. It's been absolutely fantastic. And you're not old. You're timeless, my friend. You're timeless. Not old. Timeless.
That's right. That's right. Well, and I got to tell everybody real quick, you said something last time I was at Imaginarium that helped bolster my confidence, and I've been using it on other people, and they're probably going to come looking for you now. I remember I was looking for Wi-Fi in the hotel, and we'd already checked out of our room. And I asked Stephen if I could borrow one of the empty rooms. And your words, and these were the exact words you used, you're Brian K. Morris, and you can do anything you want. So I took him at the heart.
That's true.
The only person that doesn't work with is my wife.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad I could contribute in some small way, at least, to your absolutely forward path. That's awesome.
Well, I appreciate it. You've done wonders for my massive rampaging ego. So
that's awesome.
We
thank
adore
you so
you.
Much. We do adore you, Brian, and definitely
love you guys
definitely
too.
Have you
really
on
do.
Again, to update us on new stuff and. Yeah, keep us in the loop, and you're just awesome. So thank you very much for spending time with us tonight.
Oh, thank you guys so much. It's always a joy to be on here, and continued good luck in the future. Actually, no, not luck, good fortune. You're making your own luck, so there.
That's right.
Thank you.
I love it.
It is the year of the dragon. So we're all going to have good fortune.
Well, Sandy Lender,
I'm ready for
Sandy Lender, that's a huge year at the Year of the Dragon.
He loves the dragon.
Perfect for her.
Yeah, but, really, it is.
Yes, absolutely. So, Holly, yeah, you want to wrap it up with Brian, and you can take us out, Holly.
Yes, thank you, Brian. And everybody, please check out Brian K. Morris on all these social medias and pick up his titles. And please leave reviews. Right, Brian?
Yeah. Right, definitely. Because right now I've got a troll who left me a 2-star review, so we gotta rub it in his face.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Love those trolls. They give us quite a bit of amusement.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. 10 years ago, I'd have been gutted by it, but today I think I know who did it because somebody also criticized the terrors online, and so I left a laughter emoji for him. So.
Uh-huh. Indeed a troll.
Yep.
So, yes, leave Brian some reviews. And
yes, please.
Yeah, thank you for being here, and we will see you sooner than later, I'm sure. And
I'm sure of that. Thank you so much.
We'll hopefully see you in July, but yeah, we'll definitely, you'll have you back on the show and talking about all your new endeavors and your new work.
Yeah.
And I wish the best on this current one. It sounds fascinating, and we will be checking it out.
Yes, please. Thank you very much. I look forward to hearing what you have to say about it. I really do.
Nice, nice. All right. Thank you for being here, and everyone out there. Another great show, another great guest. And rest of the week, be creative. Make something wonderful. And good night.